Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good whatever time you're listening to this podcast. My name is James Albarn and welcome to episode 39 of The Last Line. Thank you very much for joining me. On today's podcast, I speak to Leeds and Hull-based post-shoegaze group Bedroom. Although, as you'll hear in the podcast, the band doesn't actually like to be defined by genre, so apologies to them off the bat for doing just that. They have a new album coming out, and it's out on the 30th of June. You may be listening to this after the 30th of June, and so in that case, it'll be out now, and you can listen to it on all good music streaming platforms. I'm sure you can buy physical copies from the band, etc. I'll leave links in the description of this podcast to the band's Bandcamp and website, so you can go and check them out and find places to go and listen to their music. They have a new album coming out. It's called I Don't Know, and it's out on the 30th of June on Rock Action. Rock Action, of course, the record label founded and maintained by the Scottish post-rock band Mogwai. And we will also talk a bit about that later on in the show. So we have three of the four members of the band joining us on the show, and they'll introduce themselves to you in a moment. But that is Joe, Jordan, and Ryan, and this is my conversation with Bedroom. I might get you to start by, because it's the first time I've ever had multiple people on at the same time in a podcast setting. So I think it might be helpful for the listener to know who they're listening to. So if you could just, you know, whose voice matches up to whose name kind of thing. So if you could just, I guess, introduce yourself one by one and what you do in the band, and then we can just like go from there.
Sounds good. I'm Ryan, and I am the singer and play some guitar in the band.
Brilliant. I'm Jordan. I play bass and synth in the band.
I'm in the band and I play, I was going to say mostly guitar, but all guitar. Yeah, just
when you remember.
What about the clarinet? When's your clarinet solo coming through?
Occasional shaker and hand clap.
Can you actually play clarinet?
Can
you actually play clarinet?
Is that a thing? I can blow into it.
A solo pop just comes out the other end.
Right. Are you never tempted to like sample that in some way and like get it on a track?
I think you sampled me, Jord.
Yeah, I sampled you. I've sampled Joe. We were in, we played a festival in The Hague and Joe hit a chair really weirdly and I was like, oh, I'm sampling that. So that's on the record. But I'm not going to tell you which song or where it is. So you have to find it yourself.
Do you do that a lot? Do you find yourself sampling like random sounds and incorporating them a lot? Or is that like a unique thing for you guys to do?
Not really. I think we started doing it more. The first album was pretty by the book. There was no like experimentation really, but me and Ryan have both done the same uni course. Ryan's still there now. And it's just something that they sort of teach as you go along, really, that like the emphasis on field recordings and sampling and stuff like that. So it's something that I really got into, and I think Ryan's really into it as well. So it just sort of feeds into the stuff that we're doing, really.
A little bit of sampling on the first record. Like, I think there was one time when I was getting like a bus back from Manchester after a daft night, and I was sat behind the driver, and he was just talking to his mate on the phone, like organising to go to the pub. So like on the like last bit of like unhappy, you can hear them chatting.
Oh yeah, you can. I literally just re-listened to the album on vinyl, the first album, because I've been spending the last few days, knowing this was coming up, just like listening to you guys on repeat, just to like absorb whatever I can, you know. What's the what uni and what's the course like involve?
Music for Idiots, isn't it? You're doing?
Yeah. In bands. It's music production, which John did exceedingly well last year, and I thought I'm going to have a bit of that.
Ryan said he's going to do even better and then scream laugh in my face when he...
I'm going for a 2-2 and not a dress.
Well, you'll beat my third, sir.
Joe, didn't you go to like Leeds Uni proper and you're pretend Leeds Uni?
Pardon? No, we did the exact same course. We both went to Leeds Beckett Uni. Ryan, but I went to the old campus and Ryan's got all the fancy new stuff that I didn't get. I wasn't allowed to touch it because I was labelled destructive.
Leeds Beckett Uni seems to come up a lot in like I had Tom Williams on the podcast like a few times now, and he did like an artist in residency thing at Leeds Beckett to like record one of his albums and stuff.
That's it. They seem to be pretty on it. Like when I was there, Jeff Barrow came in and did a talk as well. They just seem to be, and Ken Scott, who did all the Beatles like engineering on the early albums and stuff, was like a resident lecturer there. So I think they're pretty on it with like notable people, really. It's quite nice.
Yeah, I got a lecture from one of Utah Saints. So.
Wow.
Who's winning?
1-0 to Ryan.
Are they still going? Are Utah State still going?
They do uni lectures now.
So in a way,
I think they're doing it. They're playing like a Pop World festival.
All right.
So
are they? They're probably one of those like bands that are on the rotation of like those festivals where people go and see like acts from the past. You know, there's like 80s days and stuff. Like I know Utah Saints probably aren't 80s, are they? But you know, there's like 80s days.
Chesney Hawks.
Yeah.
Want to on Corey?
Do you find that it's helped, or I mean, obviously you're probably not going to say no, it's been a hindrance, but like do you find like it's changed the way you approach making stuff now, or is it just those little things that you go, oh, I can chuck that in because that's something that I spent a bit of time doing? Or
yeah, I think it just gives you the confidence to try these things out. If you've got like, I don't know, it's just like having a mentor or something, really. Like it's because it's a different course as to like something else. Like there's no exams, it's 100% coursework, and you spend a lot of time with your lecturers, so you just sort of find out what they're into. And when someone's so passionate about something and like helps you start getting into it, I think that's really helpful. And I don't know, it was just something, I think it was something that we've always really strived for in our music. Like we always want to evolve and get better and stuff like that. And I think it was just part of finding a new sound and stuff like that. And I think you get exposed to so much more experimental music as well, so it's just interesting to try and give it a go yourself.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like I was like, I'm like a self-taught musician, so like I don't really know. I just wanted to try and I don't know, expand, like Jordan said, your musical vocabulary a bit. And yeah, it just gives you that time to kind of like don't get me wrong, it is stressful. Like last year I had like loads of coursework to come in while I was in the van, like on tour, which was not ideal, but it's definitely helped in the long run.
Well, it's interesting because I've been reading a lot of interviews that you guys have done over the like years, and how you're talking about the new album being more experimental and changing up stuff a bit more, and that the first album was a bit more straightforward. But even listening to the first album, whenever was it? 2021, 2020?
2020, yeah.
I still could hear, there was still like, I could still hear you trying different things in that album. Like it's not a straightforward, just like in like my opinion anyway, it's not like straightforward, like, oh, all these songs sound the same. And I feel like there was still a lot of like trying different stuff throughout the album. And I've seen you talk a lot about how you don't really like being pigeonholed into a genre necessarily. Where do you think that comes from as a band? Whoever wants to take that, I don't know.
I think it's just, I don't know. It's just something that I've always thought, like, you'd never, ever want to just, even in life, you just wouldn't want people to think, well, I've got everything I have from that person, you know? Like, it's we're like all different people and we've got so much varied interests and likes and dislikes. And one year we could love something and then the next year hate it. And I think it just, we're always wanting to capture where we are in that scenario. Like, the first record is such a good snapshot of us, where we were at that time in like 2019 when we recorded it. But I think we've grown so much as people that it just, I think if we did the same thing again and just did a really guitar-y record, I think it would do us a disservice as people to not show who we truly are and what we truly love in music.
Yeah, I think like at the time, like when we did the first record, it was it felt like new to us then, and so we probably were putting like quite a lot of different elements, like that weren't just like guitar music or whatever, into it. But yeah, with like this record, I just feel like it is, like Jordan said, it's like just capturing us. We've listened to a lot more music. We've developed our like musical taste, I guess, and yeah, a lot of stuff has happened. Like, we've lived through lots of different events, like obviously the big one, which I won't say, but loads of other stuff that just, I don't know, it kind of like molds your like creativeness. And I guess like, no, you never want really two records to be the same, like, because that'd just be boring. So like then the next record, you don't know what that's going to be either, and it's just nice to like keep it open-ended. So I don't know, you can just always kind of surprise yourself as well as other people.
I think we almost went into this last album expecting there to be like very little guitars, really, didn't we? That was kind of at some point the plan. And then guitars kind of got added on as the songs kind of developed and stuff and added to the songs. But there was very much an idea of doing kind of a more electronic synthesizing type of album this time, and a lot more, you know, in terms of drums as well, to be more loops and stuff like that. But I guess the guitars are just part of what we do, aren't they? And found their way to add the extra little bits on.
Mm. They definitely like now get used differently, I reckon. I think they just sound like guitars. Just try not to make them sound like a guitar.
That's the thing as well. We've been lucky enough to like be able to get to the point where we can buy new instruments and try new things out. Whereas the first record was, we'd go to the Nave and it was whatever Alex had or whatever we could cobble together. Whereas now we're sort of at a point where we can, you know, if we want to try something new and there's a new piece of equipment that we want to try out, then well, we can get it and try it. And I think that's the freedom of just being sort of childlike in our exploration of stuff. Like, it's been okay that we've tried stuff that hasn't maybe worked in the studio. But I think what we ended up with on the final album is just like a much more clear representation of us as people. I think the first album does have that, but I mean, like, we were all really nervous. I mean, like, it's the first time. I don't know if you recorded an album before Bedroom Joe, but none of us had never made an album before. And I think just the like being scared of such a monumental task, but we'd done it before. And I think coming back a second time, we knew what it took to get to the end and could have fun with it a lot more. And I think that shows in the inventiveness of the songs and stuff like that.
And is there ever a worry? I mean, maybe it's too early to say, right? But is there ever a worry that when you do change up the sound a bit, that you're not going to... I almost think it's a silly question to start with, to be honest. I was going to say to fit into like what people expect of the band, or to sound like whatever Bedroom sounds like.
Yeah. It's kind of stuck in a way that we've never really fit into any. We've obviously been mates with other bands and stuff, but we haven't really ever fit into any like specific band scene, I don't think. I think it'd be fair to say. So like, I suppose in terms of audience, you do worry that you can alienate some people. I think by like changing label, it was a risk to do that, in the same sense they had quite a loyal fan base. But yeah, it seems to have gone all right so far.
Yeah, I was worried about the, quite strongly worried about the change up. And obviously, because like Joe said, the label change was obviously going from a label diverted to one genre, I guess. And we kind of got, like, given the by signing with the shoegaze label, we became a shoegaze band essentially. And I feel like now that I feel there will be people that won't maybe enjoy it as much as because they weren't like we won't be getting like the first record again. But I think you've just got to kind of look past that and kind of just because as much as you are doing it for the people, you're doing it for yourself as well. And it's like people who want to like go on the journey with you, not to sound like a cliche dick. but yeah, I think the people like that narrow-minded to
There's an interview that I always think about whenever I get asked stuff like this. And it is like between David Bowie and Trent Reznor, and David Bowie just says like, as soon as you start to think what anyone else apart from yourself will think of it, you're just going to lose because there's so many voices in the world that could tell you how to do it. But at the end of the day, it's our four voices. And if we don't do what we want to do, then I don't think we'd be happy doing it. You know, like I'd rather like go down with the ship, but knowing that I'd built it with my own hands rather than have like another label come in and chop us to pieces and sell us to Radio One.
And also that in a way would also alienate people, right? Like the people who are already fans of your work aren't probably the same people that would like it if you were chopped up and put onto Radio One necessarily, do you know? I mean, maybe there's a crossover, but I did want to talk to you about that label switch, if that's okay. What sort of, how did that happen? And I think maybe for some people listening, they won't really necessarily know like why that might be a big deal or why that is like quite a big decision to make. So how, like, what was the thinking behind it?
Well, we've been on tour in 2021 and Stuart Braithwaite came to see us at a place called the Hug and Pint in Glasgow.
Stuart Braithwaite of Mogwai, for people listening who don't know.
Yeah. And we went for a drink with him after the show and he was being really complimentary and really nice. And he just said, there'd always be a space for you on Rock Action if you ever wanted it or something to that degree. And I think we were all just a bit drunk and we're like, yeah, that's great, but I think we're going to stick with Sonic Cathedral for the next one. And then the following year, we got asked to go on tour with them. And we tried recording the album twice at that point and it just wasn't working at all. Like we changed producers and it wasn't right. I think we tried to make it sound more live, which really didn't work because we were quite into like all the studio trickery and stuff. So it just felt like there was no point in doing that. Like we'd just be removing like a really intrinsic part of the music making process by making it all live. So we stopped doing that and got invited on tour with Mogwai by Stuart. And then, I don't know, we'd spent so much time with them and we just thought, I don't know, I think we'd all got so upset about not being able to record the music that it sort of felt like it was the start of the end almost. And then toward the end of the tour, we just all were like, we know what we need to do. We'll just go back with Alex and get it done. Like we all sat together and just had a sort of light bulb moment. And then we got asked it again by Stuart on tour on the same run that the offer was still there if we ever wanted to and he'd love to have us. And I think by that point, we'd sort of seriously considered like, we really want to do this as a job. Like this is what we want to do as a living. Like I hate being a chef and I hate working at Nando's and I don't want to do this for the rest of my life. So it just became a proper option for us. Nothing against Sonic Cathedral. There was never any bad blood there. We love Nat to pieces, but the logistics of it, like he was a one man label and we just couldn't, like, I don't think any of us expected the first album to go as successfully as it did. And like I would be lying if I said we all thought it would go like this because we didn't. And Rock Action just had the facilities and time and know-how to sort of support us in getting to that next step of making it into a job rather than a dream.
Yeah, it did feel very like next steppy. Like even like, I don't know, getting, could we be like recently we've been like playlisted on Six Music and like just opportunities that might not really arise. I don't know, it's just, it's such like a sore like topic, because I remember when we spoke to Nat, like we had a Zoom saying it, and it was like going to a breakup, because he was like, he wasn't just like a label, it was like a really good friend. But sometimes like when it comes to these decisions, you've just got to like try and think what's right for you. Because I know full well that many of us would have just stayed there because of loyalty, which I guess is absolutely amazing. But like Jordan said, it's something that like we work hard for and want to like make a, like just continue doing this for as long as we are alive.
I always think like it's funny how in this game, this in the music business, you always expect to have moments where you think like, oh, you've made it, or you've done really good, or this. But there's so many just little baby steps into like getting to the position we've been today. It's been like 6 years, 7 years or something we've been doing it. It's all so gradual, and you realise unless you're one of like the really lucky bands in the world where you suddenly wake up and you've got a hit single and you're number one, that you just have to put the hours in and the years in, and that's the only way you really build your fan base up and kind of get to a stage where hopefully you can, you know, do that as a living and actually spend more time making the music, and it's, you know, self-sufficient and stuff. So yeah, and Mogwai and Rock Action was just the next step to doing that, really.
And just off the back of that, do you feel like, because the first album did sort of blow up as far as I could tell, like I think weren't you on like the best albums at Rough Trade and stuff like that? And I know I don't know, again, it's on a very small level, but like the record store down the road where I bought your record from, like it was then he struggled to get it back in. Do you know what I mean? When it sold out, it was that kind of thing. It was like, there was a buzz around this album. Do you feel like, cause I know like for my, cause I'm basically a little bit of background, I'm a filmmaker is what I do generally. But I struggle to recognize when I've like, for want of a better word, achieved something, you know. Is that something, it's just picking up on what sort of Joe said there about it feels like more of a gradual process. It never feels like you're, oh, like we've made it kind of thing. Is it a struggle to recognize when, you know, when something like you put on the best albums at Rough Trade, is it a struggle to sort of recognize that as like, oh, wow. Or is it a bit more like, okay, well, but we've still got to get in a bus and go touring and try and do this again on the next album. And like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. It's such a weird thing because I don't know, I think the main thing is that you find out before a lot of people find out. So when it gets publicly announced, you're already so divorced from that because you're already moving on to the next thing that, and I'm not saying that in an unappreciative way, sorry. Like, these accolades are like absolutely incredible, but I don't know. I've just always been a person that's not dwelt on the fact that we've achieved something and rather looks to what we can do next. But I think that's just it's just the way people are. Like, I don't know, the best bands in the world normally don't just do one thing and then think, oh, well, that was enough, and then stop. Like, I think developing and growing is the main aim of the game. To not be a poet.
When I remember though, when like they came out the album, like when all the stuff started happening, it was like literally mind-blowingly overwhelming. Like, and it's the fact that it didn't stop, and like the fact that it seems to not stopped. It's just like, not to say stop again, it feels like we're just waiting for it to stop. Like, it's just, it has been like so unbelievably, like even to have like, to be on like podcasts like this, and like I said about like Six Music and stuff, that's always like just been like a, I don't know, you never think it's gonna happen.
Are you saying it was a dream to be on the podcast? Because I'll take
that. I was saying we're retiring after this.
Some guy who lives across the road from me, I barely ever spoke to him, and I got out of the car the other day, and he came across the road and went to me, oh, you're busy, aren't you, at the moment? I was like, oh yeah. He's like, oh, you rock all over the world, aren't you? I was like, yeah, I am. And it's like that sometimes where it's like, it's quite cool, I suppose, really, but just funny. A lot of people do say stuff like, you know, oh, it must be great, I must be making loads of money. And it's just because it's been such a natural progression and always happened quite organically. I don't think there's ever been a particular wow moment for me, but there is like cool things that happen along the way where you think that's really fun.
I think it's even just like little things that become brilliant. Like you go into a room and someone's given you free food. It's just like insane. You're just like, we've got this meal and it's for free. And like, yeah, we can have a free drink. And it's like, I don't know. It's just those little things sometimes are just the ones that keep going.
When you sell out a show, that's always a nice one, isn't it? That's always like, it feels real special. Yeah, just the idea that people are buying tickets to come see you in a different city where you've never been is like such a magical idea that I always kind of think.
I mean, even like the fact that like there's two shows that have sold out for the tour in November, that's like bizarre. Like it's so long away. There's better things.
Get a Snickers.
You get 10 for those ticket prices. And the Curly Whirly.
But I also think it's, I guess, also it's another one of those things of, you know, I think I maybe as well, most people don't know sort of what the music industry's like. So I think when people see that you're the one of the best albums at Rough Trade or that you're being played on the radio a fair bit, their expectations of what that means is different necessarily from what the reality is, right? You know, it's still like, yeah, we've still got to do a lot of work now. We're not all millionaires all of a sudden. We're not Taylor Swift, you know. So
that's the thing. Yeah, it's brilliant accolade to have, but yeah, it's like still like can't afford food sometimes, and that's scary. But like, and I think that's what people don't understand. It's what Joe said, you know, like people think you must be making so much money. It's just like, yeah, yeah, sometimes. But I think it's just like being really extravagantly self-employed. Like you do this really crazy thing where you're like jet setting and by getting on a ferry a billion times, but like you go to different countries and it's unbelievable and it's the best life experience, but it's like being the richest poor person in the world. It's insane.
To come off a tour and you've made £100 each is like you're buzzing at the end of it that you're not out of pocket.
Yeah, exactly.
I read someone reposted the other day on Twitter an article that Courtney Love wrote in like I think it was like 2000 or something. She wrote this article, and I think, you know, some things have changed since. I mean, obviously there was no bloody streaming in 2000 for a start. You know, she's still referencing Napster, which fucking made me feel old. But talking about how actually the pool of money for an artist gets smaller and smaller along the way, as you know. I mean, obviously she's talking about like, I think talking about the massive labels at that point, you know, the sort of like Universals and stuff, but like, you know, taking money along the way for different things and all that kind of stuff, and how people don't realize that at the end of it, the artist who actually made the thing, also a lot of the time in some big labels don't even own what the art that they've even done. You know, like when a novelist writes a book, it's still their copyright, but on an album, it's not always the case, you know? And I don't think a lot of people sort of realize that part of the whole music industry stuff.
I mean, that's the thing. We've been so lucky because the labels that we have worked with have been so wonderful, and we know on a personal level they wouldn't ever try and screw us over. But, you know, people aren't that lucky, and sometimes it's like, you know, you're getting stuff dangled in front of your face, which is too hard not to say no to. You know, like if a big label comes along, well, it's like us got offered some like crazy advance and it was like, you can have this money, but we're going to get a team of people to come in and make all your artwork. Your producer's not going to be your producer anymore. We're going to get a brand new producer who's going to ruin all your music. And it's just like, we could have easily just said, yeah, let's do that, because we can all put deposits on houses now and have a comfortable living. But then, I don't know, I'd rather go the hard way, and at least when we all perish, there'll be a body of work that's I'd be proud of, as opposed to trying to separate from myself for the rest of my life.
Yeah, I think like Alex Groove said it best when he was talking about Advance. He was like, it's not free money. It's like, but I can just see how people, like, because it is like so enticing how like offers are presented to you. It's almost disgusting, like how they like blindside you with a big fee, and then all these promises. But again, you're not reading the small print, are you? But I think that's like something
like nowadays is that you can't. I feel sorry for bands who don't have, you know, the radio pluggers or the people to do the PR and stuff like that, because it feels like without that, you're kind of, it's very difficult to get to your music on the radio or get to the blogs or get to, you know, places. It feels like you have to have a level of money behind you, which we only get from the labels for most people. I don't know. It feels like things rarely happen just organically and can just kind of grow from fan-led stuff. I might be wrong.
Yeah. Do you think live is still the, because you hear artists all the time saying you just got to play live and just keep going and get in front of people. Do you think that's still the case, like even today?
I mean, 100%.
I guess it works for you guys.
I think so. I mean, I think it's just the thing of you putting yourself into more situations where you think like-minded people that haven't heard you anymore. I haven't heard of you before, sorry. We'll see you and maybe like you and tell a friend about it. It's sort of like that in a way. It's so hard to do that with, like, there's no immediacy over the internet, you know? Yeah. Like, there's no there forcing you to do something. Whereas if you stood in a pub and then you're, like, listening to music and then you're like, actually, I like this band, and then give them some of your time, you know, like, that's the best way to do it. And
people in it, and, you know, I think... Yeah. There isn't a substitute for that. And I think we used to drive, you know, 4 hours from Hull to London, play a show for an hour, get back in the car, drive back to Hull. Like, you know, we have really put in the miles over the years. And we used to do that once, twice a week, didn't we?
Yeah.
Get anywhere.
Because it can be hard as well, right? Like, because, like, we've done gigs in the last year where, like, we did one awful gig where literally the audience, for the most part, just talked for the whole set, and you're just sitting there going, what's the point, right? But yeah, then yeah. One guy came up to us at the end and was like, I loved your music, you know, I'm gonna follow you and all that kind of stuff. And it's like, well, then it's like, well, okay, the gig was shit, right? But one, we've got one extra person, and you know, it's like, it's that doesn't feel like a lot, and that's quite hard to that can be hard to make you like continue, because it's like one person. But like the more you do that, I guess it starts just multiplying and growing, right?
Yeah. And I think the main thing, like one of the things our manager always used to say to us when we were starting out was just like, it don't matter if there's 100 people there or just like an old man and his dog, just like you play your heart out and you give 110%. And I think it's an ethos that we've always sort of stood for. Like, we're not, like, if we weren't there to be doing it and giving it our all, like, what's the point? And like, we don't want to disappoint people, especially when it's getting to this point when people are paying like 15 quid to see us and like a pair ticket. Like, that's absolutely insane. Like, it's just like we feel that we've got to put that effort in. And I think that's one of the main things that maybe got us a few more fans in, that people could see how passionate we were about stuff, and when people see that, they sort of take note. And I think it's just about finding like-minded people, and I think the best way to do that is, unfortunately, get in a car and drive all over the country. But we've met some amazing people along the way, and it's led to so many brilliant opportunities. We've been so lucky, but we have also put in hundreds of hours of effort as well. It's like that balance of like drive and luck at the end of the day.
You are right as well. Like, it is appreciated as an audience member when you can see the band actually want to be there. Like, not to, I mean, they're not listening anyway, it doesn't matter, does it? But I went to a festival last summer and the Strokes were headlining and he did not want to be there. Like, you could just tell that it's kind of like, it's not ruined the Strokes for me, but it is a bit like, it's a bit disappointing, you know? And yeah, it's a bit like, and you don't know what's going on. Like, I don't know what's going on in his life or that day. So you can't really judge it by one thing, but I think,
yeah, I heard an interview where he blacked off the rest of the band and said they recorded the album by emails and that kind of like,
wow.
Yeah, I was like, that's not cool.
It did look like at times they were looking at him a bit like, what's this guy doing?
That's the thing though, isn't it? It's like, that's the disappointing part when sort of the smoke screen falls and you're like, you're not like a god or anything. Yeah. Like, you're just some guy on a stage that's like, wants to just be like probably backstage doing Kirk instead or something.
We should probably talk about the new album. I read an interesting thing about It's Just a Bit of Blood, which was the first single, I believe. There was an interesting thing about when you were talking about writing lyrics and how you decided not to use the words you or I. Because you wanted to not make it about one person's point of view, but like broaden it out a little bit more. And and I've heard like Brian Eno say a similar thing about using he or she or they rather than me or you, and how that can change a song. And I just thought that was an interesting idea and wouldn't mind getting you to talk about it, if that's right.
Yeah. I mean, well, like the first, in terms of like, as I like write the lyrics, the first record was really very personal to me, and this one is too as well, but I was finding it quite difficult. I mean, it's quite difficult being honest. Like, it was probably quite easy with the first one because I can't remember it and I was probably fucked a lot of the time, but this I was like trying to keep a bit more of a level head and kind of be a bit more chill. But then it definitely started to affect my mental health a bit by being so honest, I guess. It was like the anxiety that it induced. So it was Jordan Greaves had the idea of like just speaking in, like we're using he or she instead of I. And it really did just completely like leveled me out. Just found it a lot more like easier. Like, so when you hear he and she, it probably means I, but it's math in a different word. But yeah, it was just really nice. Like, I think that just is another like proof of like us working together so well. Like, it's like things like that, and it took me a long time, I guess, to like when people criticize your words, it's kind of a bit personal, and I did take it a bit personal to begin with, but from like looking inwards more, you know, it's like for the good of the whole thing. So that whole changing it to he and she was just a really important and probably very helpful idea.
I think as well, it's when we're recording, it's such a
Was that his mum? Is it tea?
I think it's tea time.
Fucking hell. just move on. Can you edit that part? Can you edit
that? I mean, I can.
That was the best bit. I think there was a lot of anxiety you went through, weren't there, Ryan, with the lyrics? And I remember when we was at the farm recording, you going in for long walks with your little notepad. And I think it must take a lot. I can only imagine to put so much of yourself. But I think that's a lot of people like that human element and like lyrics that they can relate to in some way. So I mean, it's kind of important to have that emotional connection in it with what comes out.
Yeah, I think that was the beauty of like meeting in the middle with still speaking about honest and true situations that people can relate to, but maybe more with like masked in ambiguity, so people can still understand it, but in their own way.
Yeah, I think that's the thing as well. Like we've recorded with Alex Greaves for so long, like everything that we have released now has been produced by him. I think we're on such a great personal and professional level with him that we can, I think, be as open as we possibly can with someone, with him. He's like a fifth member when we go to record and stuff like that. It's really nice. And I think it was sort of ties into what Ryan was saying. Like, it's hard to get criticized in the first place, especially when it's about your words. Like, I've never written lyrics and I probably wouldn't want to. So like, I can see how hard it would be if someone is telling you what to do, but it never comes from a place of like spite or like we think we're better, because we definitely are. Like, that's Ryan's field of expertise. But it's when you can see in someone that you know they've got something better in them and they can sort of see it too.
Yeah. And how did you start working with Alex? How did that come about?
It was Morgan.
Yeah.
Our manager, Ryan Morgan, I think he'd worked with him in previous bands and said, I think our drummer produced our first EP, and then the EP before that was Ryan on Garage Band, I think, wasn't it? It was the first step in taking ourselves a bit more professionally. And again, it cost money at the time, which we probably massively resented, but was a necessary step to actually making good records. And also Greaves was the first person to ever like be like, "No, what you're doing is crap. Do something different," type of thing, which we'd never really had that before.
And how do you take that when you first meet someone?
It's very hard. I was 16 years old when you first meet him. And it was sort of like, shit, like, what the fuck's going on? But I don't know. It's sort of like, the only way I could describe it is like brotherly competition or something. Like, it just got to the point where you just be like, right, I'm just going to be far better than you then. Like, if you just think I'm not going to be any good, then I'm just going to prove you wrong and do far better than you ever expected of us. And I think it got to that point where maybe when we first met him, that's how I felt. And then it's just got to a point where you just, I don't know, so thankful for someone to have the balls to fucking say that to someone they've just met. Like, it takes someone to, you know, chastise you in a way to get the best out of you. And sometimes like it's hard to do that. So I'm very appreciative for like him being like that with us, because at the end of the day, you can get lost in it. And I think that's when people start to lose the sense of what the music's really like or should be about, and why, I don't know, like after 40 years, some bands just lose it because they've had like everyone around them just say, yeah, that's great for 40 years. So they just, you know, just pull shit out their ass and put it on a record. But I don't know, it's just nice to have someone that's saying these things not from a place of spite, but just from a place of knowing that we can all be better.
I think also like he's wanting to make something that he's proud of as well. Like, it's going to be his imprint on the record, so why wouldn't he push for something to be as good as it possibly can be? Because when we did change producer briefly, and just working with them was so different, because it was like we missed the, like, well, I certainly missed someone telling you something shit. Like, I mean, because I'm not the best guitar player. Like, I'm lucky if I can like get through a full song. Like, I mean, but it was just nice to have. Yeah. You need someone to tell you shit, basically.
I think it's as well. Like, us four have been in a room for like what, like with one song for like 20 hours. So you just go completely blind to it, and he comes in as just a completely impartial and brand new voice, and thinks, well, that section's pretty good, but it could do, that section could be twice as long, or you dilly-dally in too long to get into the verse. And it's just like a lot of the stuff that we end up doing is like, we'll take a song in there, do a guide track, and then just chop it into a more manageable song. And I think like that's some of the stuff that happens like after we finish the record is like us relearning how to play the songs again because they've been changed so much. And that's like an interesting thing, and I really enjoy that process. I think for other people might not like it, and I don't know, it's just the way we've learned to work. And I think it really it just feels like it goes through so many processes that at the end you definitely know that this is the best possible outcome.
It's part of the experimentation that's so fun about it as well, like, because when we go in with we go in with the tracks, and then it's almost like, now we've got access to all these toys, like, now let's just supersize them. And also, I can't imagine Greaves has ever said the words dilly-dally.
Yes, he has.
It proper suffers, doesn't he? I always like, you know, he really lives through every song that we ever record with him. Like, the glasses come off and then he wipes his brow and then he sat. And then, you know, but it's all so well-intentioned that he just wants the best, like, of the song. And it's, I think any song we've ever taken to him, he's improved in some way and added his extra kind of 10%. And you can't really ask more for that than a producer.
I think what you said about having someone there to say no is like, because I say it all the time about, there are certain filmmakers out there that I think you can tell at what point in their filmography that people just started, would just go, yeah, fine, because you're whoever. You know, I think it's so important sort of creatively to have that sort of check, someone there to check you, but like that you still, like you said, that you still sort of connect with creatively and that kind of way. We talked about like the experimentation fitting in more with this album, and you said it started out more like you were going to make a sort of synth record, and there's definitely like guitars have definitely come through and all that kind of stuff. Like, what's been the I don't want to say the journey because that's awful, but you know. What's been the journey of the second album?
I think it was sort of the polar opposite of the first one, really. We'd all agreed, especially with Greaves, that like we should start with synths and then work towards using guitars, whereas the first one was definitely get all the guitars down and see what synths we can add at the end. And I think it gave it just much more of like, I don't know, it's just a completely different process as a, like you're thinking in terms of texture and atmosphere and stuff. And it's something that all of us love so much. We're massive ambient music fans, and it's something that we always really did consider with our music. But I think this album it's really something that shines through the most, in that like every sound has been like cared for and like questioned and stuff like that. And it was just a process of making broad brush strokes and then refining them over a period of time, rather than, you know, just having a clear cut idea. Like, we knew what we wanted to record, but we didn't know how that would sound, and it came out really well in the end, I think
like our influences have developed as well. So like, it's obviously what you usually end up like writing thing like around your influences at the time. And I think just music journey. You've got me going.
I started the journey. Embrace the journey, guys. Embrace.
Don't stop believing, Ryan.
Drink every time you say journey. I just think like from listening to a lot more music has like definitely shaped like kind of how I like write. And yeah, like Jordan said, I just think whereas the first record was very I don't want to say Lego, but I did. It felt like there's always that like second album syndrome thing that we felt like we've got to prove something now. Like, we're here and now we've got to show what we can do. But it's just like the most fun. Like, it was most fun. It was definitely very difficult at times. But yeah, no, it's just been a pleasure, and I can't wait for everyone to hear it. I think it's
that's
out. When did and then we get dropped?
Did we finish October last year? September last year? Feels forever, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's crazy. But that's the thing, is like, as you say, Ryan, it's like, it was always hard, but like, it was never like, it was never hard or challenging enough to be like, I really don't want to do this anymore. Like we loved it, and like, I love playing live, but I prefer being in the studio so much more. Like, it's where I absolutely thrive. Like, I love it to pieces. So I could have done it all over again afterwards. But it's just that thing of, you know, like, you put yourself, we all put ourselves so much into it. And I think, as Ryan said earlier, like, it is that second album syndrome of wanting to prove that, and that's why we probably didn't want to be pigeonholed, because it's, you know, we don't want to be a one-trick pony. We want a long and successful career that's varied and interesting and people love. So, I feel like this is the second step on that road to get into that point.
I think as well, like, what a lot of my favourite artists have in common, it's probably, I would imagine, the same for you guys, is that you don't necessarily know what you're going to get with the next album. And I think that's always exciting. You know, you look at Radiohead or... I was listening to the new Steve Mason album the other day, and you can't, like, there's always something that you can hear them in it, obviously. Like, you know, it's Tom York doing a Radiohead thing, and there's a certain quality that, but you don't know from, you know, I can never remember the order of the albums, but like, from OK Computer to Kid A to In Rainbows, Amnesia, like, you know what I mean? It's so varied. And I think that's what people find exciting, because you just don't know what's going to come next. And I think you're setting yourselves up to be that kind of band where, you know, that's then exciting. Every you look forward every time to a new thing, right? Because it's like, well, I don't know what they're going to do next.
Well, that's the thing, is like, as Radiohead's a big blueprint for all of us, because we're such massive fans, but it's just like, each week a different album's my new favorite one because of how varied it is. And, you know, like, they've gone through so much evolution and change and haven't been afraid to embrace that sort of stuff. Like, I'm sure when Kid A came out, it was absolutely incredible because no one had heard such a mainstream band do something like that before. And I think Well, that gives us hope, doesn't it? Maybe in 35 years, my kids will think, what a flipping brilliant record that critically and commercially unsuccessful one was.
We're doing it for the
future. This one, it's like in Back to the Future when he plays that guitar solo. Just like, your kids are going to love it.
So there you have it, Bedroom. My thanks to the guys for joining me on the show. My thanks to you, the listener, for joining me this week. Be sure to check the description for links to Bedroom's work and where you can go and listen to their new album, I Don't Know, that releases on the 30th of June. And that's it for this episode of The Last Line. Oh, hay fever is a bitch. Thank you. For joining me. I've been James Albarn, and this is The Last Line.